Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Philbrook Museum of Art introduced a new exhibit this past weekend of a photographer whose work was a major integral part of the 1930s. It captured the age, but due to his premature death, has since fallen into obscurity. Lucia Nelson was a Latvian refugee who took up photography in the late 1920s. By 1932, he was a staff photographer at Vogue and Vanity Fair for Condé Nast. And over the next 6 years, till his death in 1938, he photographed the celebrities of the era, from Katharine Hepburn and Jesse Owens to artist Edward Hopper and boxer Joe Louis, the city skylines of Manhattan, circus performers, roustabouts and carnies, acrobats, and everyday people walking the streets, going to Coney Island, getting to work, and of course those idled by the Great Depression. Philbrook has acquired over 4,000 photographers by Lucia Nelson, is engaged in reintroducing this contemporary of Alfred Stieglitz and Edward Steichen to the public. That task falls to Philbrook Chief Curator and Curator of American Art, Catherine Whitney, and Curator of European Art, Dr. Sarah Lees. They're co-curating the first exhibit devoted to Lucia Nelson's photography, Lucia Nelson Photographs, Celebrity, the Forgotten Man in 1930s America, which is on display at the museum through May 7th. They join me today on Studio Tulsa. Catherine, Sarah, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having us here. Glad to be here.
This past weekend, sort of the culmination of 3 years of a lot of work and discovering and learning about and sort of resetting the work of Lucia Nelson. Can you take us back to the beginning of this process? Catherine, I know this came about from a phone call. What does Philbrook now own with these 4,000 photographs?
So this was a really fortuitous occasion. This doesn't happen, as our director said at a program yesterday. This is really kind of a magic treasure almost for the community and for Philbrook. We got a phone call in 2014 from a caller who said that she had a large collection by an unknown photographer from the 1930s named Lucia Nelson. What really was remarkable on the phone message to me was the quantity, hundreds of objects, some of the names associated with the unknown artist name, such as Edward Steichen, who was a giant of 20th century photography whom we worked under, and also the organization, the magazines that he worked for under Condé Nast, so Vogue and Vanity Fair. So all this was crammed onto a little message pad, called back the caller, and she had this interesting story. And I went out to visit her and was really astounded by both the quantity and the quality of this collection of photographs from the 1930s. We then brought back our director at the time, Rand Suffolk, and we realized while we originally went to help her assess and figure out what to do with the collection, we quickly realized that this was really a gem that Philbrook was interested in, and she was very happy to have Philbrook work with her. So now we are the happy owners of over 4,000 historic vintage photographs from the 1930s by a photographer who worked with Condé Nast, and we're now unveiling his story, which is an incredible one.
Yeah, and as Catherine mentioned, Sarah, why is it so unusual for something like this? Because basically you now have pretty much his entire professional output, as
right.
far as you know?
We have essentially all of his work, these vintage prints, and as many or more negatives as well. And it never happens because this is someone who there's almost no information out in the world. I mean, we discover that there isn't really a Wikipedia page for him. There isn't any book that's been written about him. He never had, for example, a solo exhibition in his lifetime. So we're really coming on this quantity of material that we're starting almost from the ground up and building kind of the story and the history behind it.
And, of course, his photographic career was only 6 years.
Right.
And he died at the age of 30.
Yeah.
Yet, he seemed to be right in the middle of the 1930s as far as everything he was photographing, some on assignment, some as what appears to be his personal journey as an artistic photographer, correct?
Right. Yeah, he really was a portraitist. He was a commercial photographer for magazines, but he also pursued documentary photography, which was very popular in the 1930s, if you think of people like Dorothea Lange, Hine, a lot of the FSA, Farm Security Administration photographers. So he kind of had many facets of his photographic output that were both these very documentary works in nature and also these beautiful, incredible chic commercial images, photo shoots for Vogue, as well as beautiful product placement, still lives, and many photographs of who was who in the 1930s in America.
I can't remember which one of you were mentioning that in a program this weekend that when you actually spoke with some of the archivists that are involved with Condé Nast, they knew who this person was, but they didn't know anything about Lucia Nelson.
Yes, absolutely. His name does appear on the photographs that were published in these magazines. But in fact, the archivist had no way of finding out more information about this photographer that he knew his work, but didn't have any of the backstory. So there again, it's an opportunity for us to really create the story, dig into the history, and do some of the archival research to really fill out the picture.
Yeah. So when you first saw some of these photographs, did either of you know who Lucia Nelson was?
I did not, no.
No, we didn't know who Lucia Nelson was, but we knew, of course, Condé Nast. We knew Vanity Fair. We knew Vogue. We knew about this kind of golden age of photography. And I noticed in particular the famous faces and names that he photographed. So by association, he must have been somebody very important. When you see pictures of Marcel Duchamp, Diego Rivera, Gary Cooper, Katharine Hepburn, Jesse Owens, the big sprinter in the 1936.
That's right, 1936. That's
yes.
Right. I mean, so he has to be one of the top photographers because he's going out and doing the story
right.
of the day.
He's getting the really notable people. And an interesting thing that we noticed as well is that he often photographs them a year or two before they do their most noteworthy
right.
things. So I think he photographs Jesse Owens in 35, before the 36 Olympics. We have another amazing photograph of Marian Anderson from, I think, about 36 or so. And in 39, she sings on the steps of Lincoln Memorial. So he's kind of catching these people just as they're on the rise, which is also a fascinating aspect of his work.
Now, have you? I assume both of you have gone back and, as you see these photographs, you go back through Vogue and Vanity Fair and say, okay, where did this appear? What sort of stories was he illustrating? Or was it, are there the pictorial essays or what exactly?
It's a mix of things. For example, some of his images of Coney Island did appear as sort of photo spreads talking about the entertainment that you could find there. Oftentimes it would be a full-page portrait of, say, a movie star with just a little sidebar about the latest film that was coming out. And then in other instances, his fashion photographs were used either to illustrate a story about, you know, the latest shoes or actually incorporated into advertisement for, say, Bergdorf Goodman's Saks Fifth Avenue for the department stores. So they appeared in a wide range of contexts. And part of our job was to actually go back to those original magazines and page through every one of them and see exactly where his photographs appeared.
That was the fun part. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole project has been fun, but that was one of the early fun parts.
Yeah. So from this beginning conversation with this person who called the museum, it's been a 3-year process of acquiring and now the first exhibition of these photographs. And I think out of 4,000 pieces of material, you're putting out about 120, 130.
Yes. Yeah, there are about 120 images in the exhibition right now. And it's really just tip of the iceberg for the whole collection. But we tried to select a representative group that showed the wide range of his photography and the different subjects from the portraits of the very famous people, the celebrities, the actors, the famous writers and sports icons, as well as Sarah said, some of his personal interests. He was slightly obsessed with the traveling circus, for instance, and also a lot of the popular entertainers of the day, not necessarily those just from Hollywood, but acrobats who were popular in New York at the time, and also the wanderings around New York City, his both glamorous and very gritty scenes of New York from the kind of down and out victims of the Depression, sleeping on a bench in the middle of the park, to these very glimmering, glowing skyscrapers surrounded by sun and clouds, you know, almost like the New York metropolis of the Art Deco age. So really glimpsing his personality and his production through these various segments that we laid out in the exhibition.
And is there vastly more of this same material within the 4,000 pieces?
There is, absolutely. This is, as Catherine said, just a small sample. Portraiture was one of his sort of main areas, and so we have tons of portraits of ordinary people as well as more famous ones. We don't have as many fashion photographs, but of course there are many that we didn't show as well. In fact, part of the challenge of the exhibition was winnowing things down so that we could fit into the spaces we have. And then also further images of New York. There are landscapes which we haven't really covered in this exhibition, so yeah, there are still new facets of his output that we can discover and present.
Well, let's talk about your sort of curatorial view of his work. Perhaps we should start with like the formal portraits. They look like they were really the typical Karshian, if you want to put it in more contemporary terms, the Annie Leibovitz sort of photo. It's supposed to give you some sort of insight into the personality of the person. Everything from Fanny Bryce and Sally Rand right. wearing fans.
Yeah,
and, you know, Fanny Bryce sort of making a funny picture, mm-hmm. and yet Sally Rand sort of looking
more
elegant
glamorous.
Below.
Right.
So what is your assessment of those formal portraits?
I think
portraits?
He was very much aiming for this clear, realist style, clean lines, sharp contrasts, in part influenced by Steichen, who at that point had come around to this kind of more realist approach. And in the few things that we have found that were written about Lusch's work, it often mentions the fact that he didn't want to retouch. He didn't want to make the images too glamorized, too far from reality. He wanted to present sort of an unvarnished picture of the sitter in order, as you say, to really capture a sense of their personality. So that was one of his goals as a portrait photographer.
What are some of the examples that stand out to you in that particular part of his work as far as really capturing the person?
I think the Jesse Owens image of the runner is a particularly noteworthy one. Also, there's another photograph of Joe Louis, the boxer. Mm-hmm. That's really, I've heard different people kind of interpret it different ways. He looks either tired or, I think, you know, searching. It's this very complex image, but you get a real sense of the connection between the photographer and the subject. And in fact, someone who was writing for us also noted that there's even a reflection in the mirror behind Joe Louis of Lucia mm-hmm. himself. So it's a really fascinating
Well, he looks far less heroic
yes.
than you would expect. And you would think, you know, the 1930s, this was Joe Louis' heyday. This is not the broken down fighter that fought too
right.
long.
No, absolutely.
This was the champ.
He's just getting his start once again.
There's definitely a note of vulnerability in that photograph,
mm-hmm.
which
mm-hmm.
is, I think, adds to the complexity.
Right, absolutely.
And, you know, you mentioned the Jesse Owens photograph. Leni Riefenstahl took pictures of Jesse the next year.
Right.
And it's when you look at that, you say, well, this is very evocative of this, but this happened a year before.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
In a way, so.
And of course, this was a portrait pose in a studio, and yet he's chosen to show him as if he were in action, you know, as if he were running.
About to take out of the block, you know, jump out of the blocks.
Right, exactly.
Print, right.
Is there anything interesting and different about the way he did it as opposed to other photographers of the time? Or was it very much of the style of the 30s?
I think maybe his portraits do feel to me like they're kind of the time period. Also, it was interesting to note that often in the magazines, you would have one page with a Lucia photograph and the facing page with a Steichen. And occasionally it was difficult to tell whose was whose. You
right.
know, they were very much of a similar style. And I think maybe his personality came out more in other subjects. You know, it depends, I think, on the subject as well, because there is an album of photographs of his wife. And there, I think he got a little more experimental. He kind of looked at her, of course, from many different angles in a more intimate way. And there's at least a couple in there that remind me of other photographers, even someone like Man Ray, who is much more surrealist. And, you know, he was really, I think, experimenting with a lot of different ideas, working in different influences. So, you know, maybe the really mainstream star photographs for Vanity Fair were of a type, and then he experimented in other areas.
Yeah, you definitely see him sampling other artists and contemporaries, like in that scrapbook, the photo album that you reference, his wife. There's one sitting that reminds me of George O'Keefe and Alfred Stieglitz taking George mm-hmm. O'Keefe in those very kind of quiet, beautiful, kind of intimate moments. And as Sarah mentioned, a kind of Man Ray-esque approach.
But also sort of very candid at the same time.
Candid, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And as Sarah mentioned also, the different sides of his subjects and his approaches, for instance, fashion. He was very competitive and on par with a lot of his more famous colleagues. But you start to see him trying to develop his own style slightly, either through pose or through lighting, but trying to emulate maybe Steichen's style, and maybe was persuaded to photograph a la Steichen by his editors, but definitely carving out his own little style in various other genres and subjects.
My guests today are Catherine Whitney, the chief curator and curator of American art at Philbrook, and Sarah Lees, the curator of European art. They're co-curating this massive collection that has come to the Philbrook Museum of the photographs of Lucia Nelson, found Lucia Nelson Photographs, Celebrity, The Forgotten Man, and 1930s America is on display through May 7th. And I assume this will be the first of several Philbrook exhibitions that are going to look at this collection, right?
Yeah, we hope so. We hope to travel the exhibition to other museums as well to get the name out there and increase his legacy a bit. We're just in discussions now about what his presence will be at Philbrook after this exhibition. So there's a lot to talk about, still a lot to research, but it's a pretty exciting prospect and wonderful problem, I guess, to
Absolutely.
Have, I guess.
And we can certainly, as you said, given the quantity of the archive, we can go back in and pick out different subjects
right.
and kind of present another side to his work.
Well, one of the interesting things about this exhibition is you get a sort of an overview of a lot of the themes that were involved in 1930s photography. Mm-hmm. A lot of the, say, the Coney Island photographs and the circus photographs sort of remind me of, and I'm trying to remember when Life magazine began.
36.
Yeah. So this is right at that same point where Condé Nast is doing the same sort of thing of sort of creating these American sort of this American imagery that's sort of America. And he's certainly doing that at the circus and on the beach at Coney Island. And this wonderful viewpoint, it's interesting, if he had lived longer, you know, would we have just sort of grown up with him in Condé Nast or the Life
right,
magazine
right.
as sort of these essays that made people like Alfred Eisenstadt and all these people so famous.
Robert Frank,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
What is particularly interesting about those, I think it's sort of his viewpoint, you know, there's a little ice cream stand where the look of the person handing out the ice cream cone is just so priceless.
Right. She's almost bored.
Right.
You know, she's a frozen custard server, and she's this great American face, but she's almost a little annoyed, but
right.
intriguing. Yes. It's almost like the Robert Frank woman in the elevator, you know, classic character. And I think you're right, and it's interesting that you mentioned Life, because that started right around the time Vanity Fair closed down and kind of shifted into merged with Vogue. But I think Vanity Fair was very much this smart magazine of the time and really tried to present this sort of sophisticated artistic look to its audiences and almost foster its audience that way. But in a way, they weren't in step with the time, because it was during the Depression. And while they were building the sophisticated audience, it also couldn't nurture it during, you know, the kind of extended period of the Depression. And I think that might have been a little bit of their demise. But you see in Lucia, you see the various complex sides of that era. You see the Hollywood, and you see glamour, and you see fashion, and you see then you also see the struggle and the dispossessed and the grit and the hard parts of life.
And that's perhaps one of the most fascinating parts of this exhibition, is the material that he's photographing while not being assigned to, you know,
right.
the circus and Coney Island. He's being assigned to cover that. But right. these marvelous pictures, oh, for example, the crowd scene where he's
in New York,
this is one of these great mysteries. We don't know where this crowd was.
Right.
We don't know if they're waiting for the elevated train or what exactly.
Yeah.
But he's got this vantage point, and he's just capturing faces preoccupied with something else than the photographer, mm-hmm. except for this one kid staring straight up at the camera.
Yeah, it's a great image, and it's actually one of a series, of course, because he snapped a number of pictures as he was looking mm-hmm. at that crowd. And we were only able to show one in the show, but if you look at the series, you can see, for example, the way the light shifts over the crowd, the way certain people move from the left of the frame to the middle to the right. And then, yeah, some people are actually noticing the photographer as he's photographing, and so therefore looking at us as the observers. And it's a really fascinating image. And those, as you say, I haven't found many instances where they were published, which suggests that it was really a passion project of his own, something that he wanted to do, walk around this city that he had adopted as his own and see the life of the people in it.
You were talking about the sort of realist images, and you know, he's capturing the unemployed really early in the Depression. I think this was early 30s or somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, before
33,
34. 33-ish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But he's capturing these people. He's taking cityscapes. He's almost as if he's in a process of discovery, which makes sense since he's in his early 20s. And
right.
what, he'd only been photographing for a few years before he was working at Condé Nast, which is another amazing story in and of itself.
Yeah, that's part of the intrigue, I think, and the mystery is that he came to the United States in 1922. We don't know much about what happened, how he evolved. And then we think by 28, 30, he was shooting some of his first images. And then by 32, he has this sweet job at Condé Nast as a staff photographer. And we're not quite sure how that happened. And then he was diagnosed with a Hodgkin's lymphoma 2 years later and died shortly thereafter. So he had this career of about 6 years very, very prolific 6 years, but kind of a sad, short career.
Do you think he was influenced by the other photographer? You mentioned this Steichen influence. Was he seeing things like Bernice Abbott, taking these sort of cityscapes and responding to that, or was this a project of his own?
I think he had to be aware. If you look at all the famous celebrities, artists who he photographed, he was running in these circles with these very prominent photographers and artists. So I think he had to be aware. He also was in a very prominent exhibition at the Museum of Modern Art in New York in 1937. Were there about 500, 800 photographers?
This was the first
major. It was sort of the watershed exhibition on photography, and he had four or five works in that. So there's no question he was exhibiting with, familiar with. He did have about three other exhibitions with people like Margaret Burke White and Steichen. So he was aware of his colleagues probably borrowing bits and pieces here. Mm-hmm. And you even see surrealism creeping in a little bit here and there with images here and there. There was one we actually cut from the show of gloves that was taken from a hospital clinic, but it's definitely got this kind of surreal tenor to it. So I can't help but think he was seeing and sampling.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting to you about the pictures of New York? There's some industrial scenes that sort of remind you of Charles Sheeler and what he was doing.
Absolutely.
Although he was taking a abstractionist sort of precisionist sort mm-hmm. of look at this machinery, and there was some sort of glorification, and I don't get that sense with his pictures of that.
I think there are the occasional shots, again, that suggest that he was aware of these other photographers. There are a few that really treat the skyscrapers in particular like abstract shapes. In fact, we have two prints, I should say, that are both from the same negative. One of them is printed very long and narrow. In other words, not 8x10, but he had to trim it down. And then the next one is the same building, the same negative, but printed diagonally. So that it really just makes an abstract shape of light and dark. And this was shot at night as well. So it really limits the kind of informational aspect and makes it this abstract shape. And as you say, he must have been looking at people like Sheeler, maybe, some expressionist types of photographs, and using the city as kind of the material with which he crafted these images.
Mm-hmm. And yet he was creating some remarkable images. There's one night shot, I think it's of it might have been the Daily News building,
yes.
where he's getting these little bubbles and these pieces of light, and it's just really a remarkable photograph.
Right.
And, of course, the one you've been promoting a lot is this remarkable image sort of looking up at the Chrysler building with the sun in some clouds
right
behind the building, so it's backlit.
It is.
And it's really just an amazing photograph.
A perfect image. And I should say in some cases, because these are vintage prints, they have had some experiences.
And so
they have. But that one of the Chrysler Building came through perfectly. I mean, it's this beautiful, pristine image, and it's just what you'd want to, represent that time period.
It's pretty powerful mm-hmm. in this ascending. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Catherine, I know one of the areas you were really interested in is his still lifes. He did mm-hmm. this sort of still life series. I know there was one I was really taken with of like three or four packs of cigarettes from various manufacturers and just sort of dump them in the middle and then put the packaging around in a circle. And it was, I don't know what it was. It was just, there was something striking about the image.
Yeah, it's like a pile of cigarette trash made chic and glamorous.
Yeah,
and
right.
Sexy. You almost wanted, that was for advertising clearly, but wow, was it effective.
Yeah. But what attracted you to is the still lifes?
I think the still lives, for me, have this incredible sense of clarity. And Sarah was talking about that with the style in general. It was sort of this naturalism that mixed modernist angles, sharp shadows, contrasts, but a clarity that's hard to describe. You sort of have to see it. But his compositions are fascinating. It's both modern and highly real at the same time. And I think for advertising, that style was perfect because he could sell textures of silk and furs and really get it in the sumptuous surfaces and textures of clothing. But his still lives, he also had a couple photographs of saline bottles in clinics and hospitals that just glisten. And they have both this kind of promotion of modernism and modern technology and this kind of almost removed human element that's a little eerie. So as I said, that kind of gets to this kind of complexity of the era through this visual that just grabs you.
Now, I know you've both learned a lot about Lucien Nelson over the last 3 years, but both of you are the first to admit there's a lot you don't know
yes.
about what's in this collection.
Right.
What are some of the questions you're wanting to answer about this artist and about his work?
Well, I think one of the ones we touched on briefly is just how exactly he got to the point that he did in about 4 years of working with Condé Nast. We don't know what his training was. We assume it must have been something, but we don't know what exactly.
At one point, he was working as a sous chef in the Catskills.
Right. And this is
just a few years before he's a photographer.
Right, yeah, so exactly. Basically, waiter to famous photographer.
Yeah. And that's something that we learned in speaking to his granddaughter. So that was sort of a family story that was passed down. And another aspect of this project is that we are hoping to get more information from other people who may know bits and pieces of the story, like the granddaughter, like other photo experts who might know more about sort of the context of the Condé Nast stable of photographers. And, yeah, I think there are going to be lots of questions like that that we can discover more about as we go along.
Of course, the granddaughter sort of sheds light on how this collection came to still be together. It was bought in an estate sale when the family was abandoning the house. They didn't want to move the big file cabinet with all these photographs. And so somebody said, no, I want to keep this. And they kept it for at least a generation or
more. So it was bought by a neighbor of the artist's daughter in Brooklyn and stayed with this private family for about 30 years as they moved. And then when the owner passed away, who was also a photographer, the wife inherited the works and started researching madly. And Sarah and I are really grateful for all the work she did, which was extensive. And then she contacted us and we went from there.
So what's the questions you want answered about this collection?
Not so much the collection, but questions of biography, as Sarah mentioned. He had a sister, and I want to know what happened to the sister. I want to know how he was able to work so prolifically with his Hodgkin's lymphoma. His wife mentioned in 1936 when he was in Paris, he was getting two treatments a day, yet he was still traveling around the world and working. And it sounds like he had this really vivacious personality. He must have in order to kind of penetrate these social circles in New York City as an immigrant who didn't know anybody when he first got here. So a lot more about maybe his personality, his family situation, those sort of stories. But I think I hope we'll be able to answer some of these as other scholars hear about this and become interested. And maybe there's another archive and estate of a contemporary of his that has a letter from Lucia that will fill in little holes here and there, we hope.
And how do you anticipate that the museum will use this collection? I mean, obviously you'll bring them out every so often, but do they become a resource for telling a larger story, say, about the 1930s America in an exhibition about that, or about various subjects that he was photographing?
Yeah, I think that's really relevant for us because while these images are mostly of New York, it is America in the 1930s. And in Oklahoma, the 30s are really important and always relevant, I think. We mentioned there was a Coney Island image of the beach that was acknowledged by U.S. Camera Magazine in 1937 and reproduced as one of the award-winning photographs of the year. And it shared the same pages with an Arthur Rothstein image of the dust cloud of Oklahoma, you know, the father struggling against the dust cloud with his two sons on the same pages. So that's a tie-in. Also, he died right before Wade Phillips announced the gift of the house to the city of Tulsa, making it a museum. So he's really sort of painting that picture of the 1930s right up until Philbrook started. So that's exciting for us, too.
All right. Well, and it sounds like there's a lot of work ahead, correct, Sarah?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, well, we wish you both success with it. And you can see the first impact of that work in Found, Lucia Nelson Photographs, which is on display through May 7th. Catherine and Sarah, thanks very much for joining
us. Thank you.
Philbrook Museum of Art's Chief Curator and Curator of American Art, Catherine Whitney, and the Curator of European Art, Dr. Sarah Lee, speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. They're co-curating the new exhibit by Philbrook devoted to the photography of Lucia Nelson. The museum recently acquired over 4,000 photographs from the Condé Nast photographer. The first exhibit is titled Lucia Nelson Photographs, Celebrity, the Forgotten Man in 1930s America. It's on display at the museum through May 7th. Details at philbrook.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.